Welcome to the podcast, How to Be Well and Strong. I'm your host, Jacqueline Genova, and I'm excited to have you join me as I speak with some of the leading figures in the fields of wellness, integrative medicine, and mental health, as we discover what it truly means to be well and strong in both body and mind. Get ready to be empowered, inspired, and motivated about being an advocate for your own health. Today we have a very special guest, Dr. Tony Jimenez, the founder and chief medical officer of Hope for Cancer Clinics in Tijuana and Cancun, Mexico. Dr. Tony takes us through the principles and critical steps of healing cancer. We discuss the importance of detox pathways, nutrition, movement, emotional work, and more. For over 25 years, Dr. Tony has dedicated his life to the study, clinical research, and implementation of non-toxic and integrative strategies to treat cancer, chronic infections, and immune disorders. Today, he is one of the most trusted voices in the world of integrative cancer therapy. Known for his active involvement in the education of his medical staff, including over 25 MD physicians, oncologists, and interventional radiologists, Dr. Tony is an avid educator who shares his wisdom with professional, patient, and general interest audiences across the world. His work has been published in several peer-reviewed articles, and his desire to learn and innovate is reflected in his active support and participation in patient-focused, in-house research and development work. Without further ado, let's get into our conversation. Good morning, Dr. Tony. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. You are in sunny Tijuana right now, right?
I am in beautiful, sunny Cancun.
Oh, even better.
Even better.
I have yet to visit either, but I've heard incredible things.
Yeah, you're always welcome. Where do you live?
I'm in Greenville, South Carolina.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, yeah, one of my assistants is originally from Greenville, but now she moved to Texas to be closer to where I live and my wife. So, yeah,
okay.
Greenville.
Very nice. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's funny, Dr. Tony. I moved here about a year and a half ago from Boston. So it's been quite the change, but I've been enjoying these beautiful days of mild winter here. I mean, right now it's 70 and sunny and it's February, so can't complain. Yeah. Well, first of all, Dr. Tony, I'm incredibly excited to connect with you. I've been following your work for quite a while now, so I'm truly honored to have you on and dive into things that I've been wanting to ask you firsthand for quite some time now.
Awesome. I'm excited also. Thank you for this opportunity and for this work because, you know, we're obviously living in times where awareness and education is more important than ever.
Truly. No, I couldn't agree more. You have outlined these incredible seven key principles of cancer therapy. And while we don't have time to cover them all, at least not during this episode, I would love to touch on a few of them. But before we start, certainly, as I said before, you know, we all have a story, especially those of us who find ourselves in the space of integrative and complementary medicine. So what is your story, Dr. Tony, and what inspired you to do the work that you're doing today?
It's a question that was very clear to me, Jacqueline, because, you know, God put like open doors, closed doors. But I had finished my medical training, and I was going into the surgical field. I was very talented with my hands, and that was my path. And my dad called me. He lived in Houston, Texas at the time, and he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. But he hadn't told me when he was diagnosed initially, so he went to a famous place there in Texas, in Houston, and he had one shot of a hormone blocker, and he felt worse than he had ever felt in his life. And that's when he called. He said, you know, son, I was just diagnosed with this. I didn't want to tell you because I didn't want to worry you, but this is what happened. And can you help me? Because if this is how I feel with one injection of a hormone blocker, I can't continue this. So that was my first inspiration. My dad, you know, when my dad calls me with this, I actually... when he called me, I said, Dad, I'll call you back in 5 minutes. So I hung up the phone and I cried, processed everything and said, okay, let's do it. And that has taken me into an incredible path because I also had a prophecy in a small church in Pasadena, Texas, of all places, southwest of Houston. And it was a prophetic word was spoken over me. It was my only time at this church, and I don't even know where that church is anymore. And the minister said that there's someone here that's going to do great things in medicine, and it's not in this country. And many will come to his healing center from all over the world to find help and healing, and he will treat prime ministers, ministers, actors, famous people, but it's not in this country, she kept on saying. And then she pointed in my direction, and she said, it's that young man there. And I still couldn't believe it was me because, you know, there's a lot of people in the church. And she said, yes, you with the blue shirt. And I looked down and I said, oh, me? Yes, you. So that I have seen the Lord confirm this time and time and time again. I've traveled the world. I've treated people that, you know, I can't even mention their names. And I now have two healing centers, one in Tijuana, Mexico, and one in Cancun, Mexico, where I am currently now. And so it's, I guess to answer the question, it was divine intervention. God had a plan like he does for all of us, right? And that's my mission and my passion. And then my dad, he was in his early 60s, and he lived to be almost 83. Wow. And passed away from congestive heart failure. So the prostate cancer was resolved. And even with the heart disease, we helped prolong his life even, I think it was like 2-3 years more, because a cardiologist in Texas had told them, you know, you have very little chance of surviving past 6 months to a year. And so with an integrative approach, because see, the important thing to know, all your listeners, Jacqueline, is that the same way that we treat cancer, it's really not that difficult and not that complex, I might say. Mm-hmm. It's, and we'll talk about the 7 key principles. That's also for prevention. It's for wellness, and it's also for any chronic disease. Of course, in cancer, we have to focus a few things, you know, where the tumor is and the estrogen positive or not, all those more details. But the overall foundational treatments of cancer are applied for wellness and prevention as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think too, Dr. Tony, with cancer nowadays, at least in the U.S., and you're very well aware of this, is that when people hear the C word, it's an automatic death sentence, right? And yes. What I love that, you know, people like you are doing and other clinics across the world is that you're bringing light to the fact that stage 4 cancers can be healed, right? Cancer can go into remission, and it's truly just changing the way that we approach it. And to your point too, I mean, earlier, I think this could be a whole other episode in itself, but the way we treat cancer in this country, it's in that paradigm model of let's suppress symptoms, right? So let's target the mutations of the cancer. And then, you know, once we've hit that with an estrogen blocker, then it's going to form another mutation. And then we'll try a CDK4/6, and it goes on and on and on until you've exhausted all your drugs. The cancer has formed so many mutations because of all the therapies you've thrown at it, again, while not addressing the root of the problem, which is why I'm such a big fan of all of the therapies that you practice and that I've had people come on the show and discuss.
There's a doctor at Stanford University in the U.S., and he is the head of clinical oncology at Stanford, and he was a former head of the American Cancer Society. His last name is Sledge, Dr. Sledge, and I was in a small workshop with him at Harvard, and he said it simply. He said there's smart cancers and stupid cancers. 90% of the cancers are smart cancers and only 10% are stupid cancer. What does that mean? Like, you're talking about mutation. So let's say this is a cancer cell in my hand, and smart cancers have many driver mutations, multiple driver mutations. So these targeted therapies that are targeting a KRAS mutation or a epithelial growth factor mutation, whatever it is, it's short-lived because ultimately the cancer cells are going to bypass that pathway. And so actually the FDA approved these immunotherapies like Keytruda, Opdivo, Yervoy with a 3-month survival. That was the criteria for approval. And we see this time and time again. Obviously, these drugs can suppress cancer growth for some time, be it with all the toxicity that they are associated with, but they can suppress, but they're never a medium to long-term solution, because cancer cells are smart. They have many mechanisms, and that's what we target our hope for cancer. It's not really about the type of cancer per se. It's about the biological hallmarks or characteristics of cancer and the foundational treatments that that we need to administer.
Yeah, absolutely. And all of those foundational treatments target the terrain, right, of the body, start with the foundation of the body. Yeah. No, I love that, and I couldn't agree more. So let's just get right into it. You have outlined these incredible seven key principles that you obviously use in the treatment of patients at your clinic. So I love to start with detoxification, because this is one where I feel like so many people throw around this word, not necessarily knowing what it entails or what it means. So what do we mean when we say that our bodies need to detox? Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick pause to share with you a bit more about today's episode sponsor. Have you ever thought to yourself, why is Manuka honey so special? Or even, why is it so expensive? Well, for starters, based on a large number of studies, plus anecdotal evidence, Manuka honey benefits range from helping to heal sore throats and digestive illnesses to reducing acne and gingivitis. It's honestly a miracle worker. My favorite ways to incorporate Manuka honey into my daily routine include mixing it in my favorite tea, adding it to my morning smoothies, using it as a glaze over chicken or fish, or drizzling it in my granola or acai bowls. Like most things today, though, not all honeys are created equal. To obtain the most benefits, you'll need to know the specific types of raw, unpasteurized honeys to look for, including real Manuka honey, which is why I love Wetterspoon. Wetterspoon's passion for holistic health is rooted in the rolling hills of New Zealand, where every flavorful drop of Wetterspoon Manuka honey is born. While Manuka honey can be a bit expensive, a little goes a long way. Plus, they're offering Well and Strong followers 15% off with the code WELLANDSTRONG at checkout. Now, back to my conversation.
Yeah, it's a loaded question, and I'm going to start probably with what most people don't start with when they talk about detox, but I consider it to be the most important, and that's detoxing our negative thoughts. Because I've often been quoted as saying a negative thought can kill you faster than a bad germ. So oftentimes it's about detoxing the colon, the gallbladder, you know, anything else, but we forget about detoxing our negative thoughts. Let me give you an example. We had a patient that had stage 4 breast cancer in the liver, in the lungs, in the bones, and her name is Pam. And she had a best friend of 25 years, and the best friend was a nurse. And she was against Pam coming to do integrative oncology treatment. She wanted her to stay back home in the U.S. and do more chemo and more radiation, but Pam had done a lot already. She was exhausted. Her immune system was poor. So Pam came to our clinic in Cancun. She was here for the 3 months. She learned all about this, about detoxing negative thoughts and toxic relationships. So she went back home, and she told her best friend, the nurse of 25 years, that they needed to distance themselves from each other. Because even though they loved each other, the nurse was, you got to do more chemo. You know, what about radiation? You've already done radiation to the hip bone, but what about, you know, for the lung tumor? And so Pam had had enough. Anyway, after the 3 weeks, she goes back home and she tells this to her friend that she had to distance herself. And then 6 months later, Pam comes back for a checkup. I see her again a year later. A year and a half later, and she was given a very bad prognosis when she came to us initially. And then about the two-year mark, I'm at our Cancun Center, and I'm giving a Q&A session, and I see Pam in the back of the room. And she was with someone there, but I didn't recognize the lady, and it was her best friend, now the nurse. Now she's back. She's embracing her treatment, changed her paradigm, and now Pam accepted her back into her circle because now it's not a toxic relationship. And I could tell you many stories of this. Even one patient that kind of misunderstood me, and she went back home and she divorced her husband because he was the problem. He was the toxic relationship. And guess what? oh, she was fine. She was a different person when she came back, and there was significant decrease in her cancer activity at all levels. And so I'm not advocating for divorce. She misunderstood me, but that was her way to separate herself from a very, very abusive, toxic relationship that could have been, you know, the drop to spill the glass and the cancer developing and or progressing. So we need to, everyone listening, we need to detox ourselves from negative thoughts. And it's hard because you might have pain. You know, the doctor with all the diplomas and the white coat told you that, mm-hmm. you know, you have your terminal, but then we're all terminal. Even yeah. he's terminal that told you that, right? So yeah. so this is very important, detoxing our thoughts and separating ourselves from a toxic relationship. And how is that done? That's done by prayer, meditation, finding time for yourself, grounding yourself, eating healthy. And it's interesting because when you're proactive and you're healing, you heal faster. You have less negative thoughts instead of when, you know, the oncologist is saying, do this, do that, do that. And oftentimes, Jacqueline, you know this from your experience with your mom, the patients are not even really well informed of what the oncologist is telling them because they don't have time to explain it all. You know, most of the time, there are some that do, of course, but in general, patients come here, they don't know what chemo they did, they don't know why they did the treatments that they did, and they're very confused. So that's the first part of detoxing, I believe. And actually, maybe we'll show my first book, but my second book coming out this year in 2024 is about emotions and cancer and the correlation of that. So we have what we call best practitioner, behavioral, emotional, and spiritual therapy. And so we work very diligently on that and looking for what is it, what traumas, conflicts in life, the sexual abuses, the bad relationships, the financial losses, the, you know, any loss in your life, detoxing, getting rid of these conflicts and traumas, because that's really well rooted in the disease spectrum.
Yeah, it's so important. And I've said this many a time too, and Chris Wark says this all the time too, but you can be doing everything right from a physical standpoint, mm-hmm. right? Like eating properly, doing all these therapies, detoxing your body with coffee enemas and what have you. But if you mm-hmm. fail to, just like you said, detox your mind and really get rid of those negative thoughts and address unforgiveness and trauma, your body can't heal, right? It's not in that
That's
state.
Right.
And can you just touch on, Dr. Tony, from just a physiological perspective, what stress and those negative thoughts do to our bodies?
Yeah. Well, before I address that, just one final thing. We hear it in a downward causation from the spiritual, the emotional, the mind, the soul, and then the physical body. And today in medicine, it's all about the tumor, right? The physical thing. And by the way, cancer is not a thing that you could just cut out and that's it. Cancer is a process, right? So we have to work on the spiritual, the emotional, and the physical. And why is this so important on the emotional level? It's because everything is frequency. Everything is resonance. Everything is vibration. We are energy beings. And actually, that's where disease starts, at the energy level. Before there's a tumor, way downstream, there's an energetic dysfunction. Then there's a chemical dysfunction, and then a physical, and that's the actual tumor, or the pain, or the inflammation. So going back to the initiation of a disease process at an energetic level, we know that, for example, a healthy cell has a frequency of about -70 to -90 millivolts. A diseased cell is -30 to -20 millivolts. So children, their cells are high frequency vibration, -90, -70. As we get older, as we become toxic, as we're exposed to environmental pollutants and so forth, then those cells begin to decrease their voltage, their frequency. And that's called transmembrane potential. It's biology 101. Every cell has a positive and a negative. Positive on the outside, negative on the inside. Cancer cells are inverted. Negative on the outside, positive on the inside. And so when we work on negative thoughts and releasing this, we're increasing our vibration, because the highest vibration are things like gratitude, love, joy. And guess what? Cancer is dark. Cancer has a low vibratory state. And so every cell of our body, the trillions of cells, the cancer cells, they're getting that frequency from what we're emitting in our mind, our thoughts, and our energy. And so cancer is like, wow, the doctor gives you that C word, as you said, Jacqueline, and that prognosis, and that this is not curable, that we can only prolong disease, make you, you know, have a little better quality of life, palliative care. All those words are so negative, so low vibration, and the cancer cells like, oh, this is my opportunity. And this is not hearsay. This is known. This is published. It's scientific information. But the conventional world, of course, doesn't have anything to offer in this field, right? Yeah. It's just the drugs and the chemicals. So I think I answered the question.
Yes. No, absolutely. And another thing too, Dr. Tony, and I always share this with my mom, and I'm a part of all of her oncology visits, even if I'm not there physically, but at the end of every appointment, and in the beginning too, I remind her, I'm like, Mom, like, remember what the doctor says is not truth, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a difference between truth and fact. And truth says you are healed. Jesus tells us we are already healed. And I say, like, just reject what the doctor says and remember truth in every single one of your appointments. And I think that's something that sadly not a lot of patients do. And again, you know, we become what we think. And if a doctor says you have X amount of time to live, right, your body's going to respond to that. And it's just like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it's so, so important. That's really interesting, though, about the actual, like, energetic measurement levels of the cancer cells. How did they go about measuring that?
Well, that was measured in vitro and even in vivo studies. You know, they've done the studies with tissues, so that's very well documented. And in my book, I give you a longer explanation and a really, really beautiful chart. Yeah, it's very powerful, because once we understand these mechanisms, then we know that everything is so, so important. And everything, you know, crossing the T's, dotting the I's. Because oftentimes patients are at our centers, our treatment centers, and, you know, it's easy because there's the nurses, the therapists, the doctors. But then what happens when they go home?
Right.
So I encourage everyone that, and everything you learn, apply it. Apply it, and you're not going to be perfect, because none of us are, whether it's in taking supplements or doing your coffee enema or going for a walk or having good sleep, but do your best. And, you know, I would say, just to point this out for everyone, the four big things to consider are sleep, nutrition, exercise, and mindset. Here's mindset again. Sleep, nutrition, exercise, and mindset, right? So it always comes down to the basics.
Truly. And I think that's something that too, that is so underemphasized, is it is the basics. People think you need this like complex prescription of some type of, you know, targeting drug. But again, it's just those foundational things that really lead us to health. But Dr. Tony, so we touched on the emotional detox aspect, which I love, but from a physical perspective, what are some of the practices that you use in your clinics to help a cancer patient detox?
I'm a naturopathic doctor as well as a medical doctor. And in naturopathic medicine, we have what's called the therapeutic order of healing. And the first step there is to remove obstacles to health. And this is where detoxification comes in. Removing obstacles to health, because with heavy metals, with parasites, with yeast, fungus, viruses, toxicities in our mouth, right? Root canals, periodontal disease, cavitation, all this, we need to remove these obstacles to health. So we want to open up the pathways of elimination. And the first one, of course, the biggest organ of elimination is the skin. And I'm probably one of the first, I say this humbly, to bring near-infrared saunas more mainstream into the holistic alternative field. And now even in some conventional worlds, they're talking about light and sauna and heat and all this. But I started this many years ago, and it's taken off. So I'm a huge fan of near-infrared sauna because it's a very nice way to detox. Near-infrared light is physiologically similar to the light of our cells. So when we do near-infrared, our human mammalian cells are like, I recognize this. I recognize this frequency because near-infrared light resonates at a specific frequency. And for the cells, it's, So you help to detox heavy metals. You improve microcirculation. You open up the pores. And for the cells, for the normal cells, it revitalizes them. And the cancer cells don't like that type of frequency. And so detoxing with near-infrared sauna is hugely important and beneficial. The second one, as you mentioned, Chris Warwick and many of us, coffee enema. My patients have been doing coffee enema since 2000. Almost 24 years ago when we opened our first Hope for Cancer Treatment Centers in Tijuana. Now we have the second one in Cancun that we opened in 2015. But coffee enemas are very, very important because they're detoxing the second most important organ of detoxification, which is the liver. And so we're detoxing the liver and the gallbladder with coffee enema. And when you do a coffee enema, you're upregulating the glutathione production in the liver, which is the biggest antioxidant that our liver and our body manufactures. Let me tell you a quick story, Jacqueline, if I may. We have a patient here in our Cancun Center who's an anesthesiologist, and her husband is a surgical oncologist. And the patient is the anesthesiologist to the husband when he does the cancer surgery. So Katia is her name. She was diagnosed with a tumor right next to the kidney. Mm-hmm. Her husband did the surgery. He removed the tumor. He removed the kidney. He removed her spleen and removed a lot of lymph nodes to his own wife. And first I said, Doc, why do you, as doctors, we don't do these things. We have, one of our colleagues that we trust do it. And I said, why did you do this, the surgery on your own wife? He said, well, for two reasons. First, there's no one that loves my wife more than I. I said, oh, that's interesting. And second, he says, I wanted to make sure it was done right.
Goodness.
He did it. So after the surgery, he brought his wife to us because he knew that conventional medicine. He's in that field. He's a surgical oncologist, has many oncology friends. And so he brought her to us. But what I want to tell you about this is that he had started his wife on coffee enemas before he brought her to us as a surgical oncologist, right? And then he starts explaining to me from an anatomical perspective how coffee enema works. I mean, I knew this, but he started explaining this as a surgeon, right? I'm like, wow.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's something I'm still trying to get my mom on board with. I think she just needs to bite the bullet and learn how to do it. But I've heard they're incredibly powerful. But would you say that someone with like liver mets, for example, would benefit more so with coffee enemas?
With liver mets, it's a must. And I would recommend for her to consider also castor oil packs on the liver. Yeah, excellent. But the coffee enemas is a must. Sometimes we patients are like that. They don't want to bite the bullet, as you say, Jacqueline. They don't want to do it for whatever reason, especially the macho men from Wyoming or Montana that come to us, right? But after a few, they begin to feel better because coffee enemas also help mitigate pain. Mm-hmm. It helps like get clearer in your mind, especially those patients that have had chemo. They're cognitive, they're like clearer and they just feel better, right? So then after a couple of them, some of the patients say, can I have two a day? No, we'll stick with one, right? And true story, many of them.
Yeah, so powerful. And you touched on nutrition. This is an area that I love, 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 just because, I mean, everyone has a different standpoint when it comes to nutrition for cancer, right?
Yes.
So you spoke about it in the context of detoxification, which obviously is important. But just in general, Dr. Tony, I'm really curious, what is your nutritional like standpoint overall? And I've heard you talk about full spectrum nutrition. We hear about ketogenic diets. We hear about plant-based diets. We hear about the Gerson therapy and juicing. And then again, everyone's like, oh, but people are different, so you have to test. So what is your take on all of that?
Yeah. And my take comes from 30 plus years of working with cancer patients. We treat about 700 new cancer patients a year at our Hope for Cancer facilities. It's not much compared to Mayo Clinic or MD Anderson, right? But within integrative alternative clinics, I think we're among the top 1% of that, right? So it's a lot, yes. And what I have learned is, first of all, and I coined this term, garden food plan. The closer we are to the garden, the better the nutrition is. And you're right, next year could be another diet that it becomes a fad, right? Before it was the Atkins diet and this diet, and you know, it always changes. And it's true, Jacqueline, this is the most stressful thing for patients. Even after they're with us for 3 weeks, they go home, we prepare them as best we can, but this is the stress of them the most because you're afraid, you know, like this and that. I could talk a lot about this, but as you said, in general. So in general, first of all, I want to say cancer cells don't only feed on sugar. That's the first thing we have to realize. So I did a 15-minute video on does sugar feed cancer, and you can find it on YouTube. But think about this. If it was that easy, we would all stop sugar, and that would be the solution. But no, then cancer cells feed on protein. So let's start stop sugar. Let's stop protein. Well, cancer cells will feed on fat. And so, okay, you stop sugars, you stop proteins, you stop fat. Well, the cancer wins because the patient is malnourished, right? So it's not about stopping sugars. It's about going back to the garden, eating foods that are, you know, non-GMO, organic, less than sugars. Sugars that are in nature, not adulterated by man, in fruits, vegetables, molasses, sugar cane, honey, all this that it's unadulterated. So my take, to answer your question more specifically, my take on nutrition is the closer you can get to the garden, the healthier it will be. So basically more of a plant-based, right, nutrition plan. I don't advocate raw too much because it's tough to digest, and so slightly steam is much better. I include eggs. I think eggs is a perfect food. One of the most important proteins in the body is albumin. And albumin, we have seen that serum albumin level, which is considered normal, 3.5 to 5, I don't think this is a good range. When a cancer patient blood test shows albumin below 4, then that's not a good indicator for a successful outcome. So I like my patients to have a serum albumin level of 4 and above. Those patients do better. So eggs are very rich in albumin, as are kiwis and other fruits. We're okay with fish. It has to be non-bottom dwelling fish, more above surface fish, as you know. No crustaceans, of course, because they're high in heavy metals. So, it's personalized, always personalized and individualized. We do a number of tests to look at what is best for each patient. We have nutritionists at both of our treatment centers that specialize in cancer nutrition. Mm-hmm. So this is a big deal for us. And remember, broccoli could have all the studies in the world, but if we eat broccoli and we're bloated and gaseous and maybe a little lethargic, well, broccoli is not good for a Jacqueline or for a Tony, right? So let me tell you one more thing, because I like to teach or talk about stories because we remember stories, right? So I have a patient. She's from LA in the US. She had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. She had the Whipple surgery, which is the most aggressive surgery in oncology, where they remove the pancreas, part of the liver, the gallbladder, sometimes many lymph nodes, and it's just a big problem for patients after this. So Rivi is her name. She had stage 4 pancreatic biliary duct cancer in L.A. They did the Whipple surgery. 3, 4, 5 months after the surgery, she begins with pain again. And she goes back and she said, you know, something is wrong. They said, no. Everything is good. We got it all. We removed everything and you're fine. Well, she kept insisting till finally they re-scanned her. And guess what? They found a tumor in the surgical bed where the pancreas was, and now metastasis to the liver, which she didn't have initially.
Yeah.
And so then that's when they did the research. They came to us, and to make a longer story shorter, Rivi is now 13 years post this.
Wow.
And remember, her prognosis was 6 months or less with stage 4 recurrent pancreatic bile duct cancer.
Yeah.
But what I want to say about this is that I asked Rivi this question. She's a Bible scholar. She's originally from Israel. She's studying at Jerusalem University, and she teaches the Bible from a Christian perspective and a Jewish perspective, and she's written books on this and all that. So I asked Rivi, the Bible scholar, I said, Rivi, does it make sense for an all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful God to put something in the garden that if we have cancer, now we shouldn't eat? Because, you know, a lot of diets out there don't eat fruits because they feed cancer cells. And you mentioned Chris Ward. He's a good friend of mine. He and I concur on this. And I'm telling you, one of the reasons why I concur on this is because my conversation with Rivi. Because in my idea, in my spiritual download, why would God put something in the garden that we can eat when we're healthy, but if someone has cancer, now the banana is bad for you, or the pineapple, or the berries, or whatever, right? Whatever fruit, the oranges. No, these are still healthy for us. And Rivi told me, Dr. Tony, you're right. It doesn't make biblical sense that what God put in the garden, you could only eat when you're healthy. Of course, everything in moderation, right? We know that, everything in moderation. And at Hope for Cancer, we're like 80%. More vegetable and 20% fruit, right? So that's good. But the point is that it's a garden-based diet that we do always. I also like to rotate the diet every 3 to 4 months because cancer cells are very intelligent. they're very intelligent. Remember what I said about Dr. Sledge Sloan at Stanford? I did say that, right?
Yes.
Dr. Sledge at Stanford.
Yes, you did.
The smart cancer and the stupid cancer. So cancers are smart. They're going to bypass certain mechanisms. So if you're always on a keto diet, how many patients throughout the years come to us and say, Dr. Tony, I was doing the Gerson diet, the keto diet, the whatever diet, and then the cancer started to progress? Yes, because we need to rotate the diet. So a patient said, Dr. Tony, I've been drinking the same smoothie for the last year. No, let's change the ingredients in that smoothie, right? Switch it out. So in essence, Jacqueline, that will be my take in a brief summary of what we follow with nutrition at our centers and what I do personally as well.
That makes complete sense to me. I guess with that same philosophy, going back to the ketogenic diet, are there certain circumstances where you would maybe advocate for a patient to be in a state of ketosis? So I've heard that particularly when it comes to things like hyperbaric oxygen, you want the body to be in a state of ketosis in order for that therapy to be effective. Have you found that in your clinic? Is that something that your protocol consists of?
Yeah. Very rarely do we do a ketogenic diet. I think it's too tough. And, you know, there's plant-based ketogenic diet and animal-based ketogenic diet. And animal-based ketogenic diet, we don't ever do at Hope for Cancer. Animal protein is hard to digest. About 25 to 35% of the caloric expenditure, you, me, anyone, is in the digestive process. 35%.
Wow.
So if you're eating foods that are harder to digest, it's going to take a lot of caloric expenditure to break those those foods down like meats, and then or raw foods, and then assimilate them. And so what is the main symptom of cancer patients? It's fatigue, tiredness, right? They need more energy. So we need to give them foods that are easier to digest, easier to assimilate, or more bioavailable. So for sure, we don't do carnivore-type diets or ketogenic, those type of diet. With respect to hyperbaric oxygen therapy, this is a therapy I've been doing for many, many years. It's awesome. I have a hyperbaric chamber at my home as well. And, even from stimulating stem cells, right? The few stem cells that we have or that a cancer patient had, hyperbaric has been shown to do that as well. And we're bringing in oxygen at a deep level. Remember, cancer is low oxygen. It's a hypoxic disease. It's an acidic disease. It's an inflammatory disease. And it's a cold temperature disease. Mm. So low oxygen, acidic, inflammation, and low temperature. So here's back to getting anything you can with the diet to affect all this. The anti-inflammatory foods, right? Not inflammatory foods. We want foods that are not going to make the tumor microenvironment that you mentioned earlier acidic. We want to also increase the temperature. So don't drink cold fluids, right? Don't things with ice, sparkling water, things like that. We need to decrease or eliminate. And also we want to up-regulate oxygen stores in the body. So green live food.
Yeah.
A meat is dead. I mean, you put a piece of meat on the ground and it's going to rot, right? So yeah, that's my thought and I'm sticking to it. And, I could talk about this a bit more, but it's my experience also.
No, I appreciate that. I mean, I feel like I've been through the ringer in terms of trying to find the best diet for my mom. And for a while, she did try the ketogenic diet, but we found that in order for her to be in that therapeutic state of ketosis, she really had to sacrifice a lot of plant foods, which we know are critical, especially when it comes to ER-positive breast cancer. So we kind of stepped back from that. I kind of realized how much stress she was under every time she had to measure her food. And to the point, I mean, the conversation's coming full circle, but to be in that constantly stressed state when you're consuming food, like your body will not absorb the nutrients from your food. So you're really, I mean, you're not helping yourself. But the diet she primarily follows now, I would say, is a more ketotarian type diet. She does have eggs. She does have fish. But a lot of vegetables, for sure. Mm-hmm. But on a quick note, though, Dr. Tony, I had Dr. Thomas Seyfried on the show when I first started, and he obviously wrote Cancer as a Metabolic Disease. And my question to you is, what is your take on his research?
Well, I know Thomas not fairly well. We've met on a few occasions. The research is solid. But, with all due respect, I'm in the trenches. And I see patients every day. This has been going on in my own Hope for Cancer Centers for nearly 24 years. And before that, I worked at a big cancer hospital for 9 years. So research is great. And then integrating it into the clinical aspect, right? It's the key. So I just have learned through my experience with cancer patients we have patients from over 40, 50 countries. Right now we have patients from Australia, from Trinidad, from Tobago, from, you name it, Canada, New Zealand, France, everywhere. They come to us with different personalities, different cultures, different food history. And so that's what I've learned. And I like and I appreciate Thomas Seyfried's work. It sheds a lot of light, right? We see a lot of information. And then we learn from actual doing it at our centers, right? But you mentioned something very important, is that stress factor, the nutrition. And oftentimes, Jacqueline, I don't even call it diet, because when we think about diet, it's like work, it's hard, it's restrictive, And so we call it nutrition, right? You mentioned full spectrum nutrition. That's what we say. Garden food plan. The garden food plan. Wow, that's alive. That's healthy. And you could have some eggs and some fish, right? But that stress factor is so important, because another characteristic, as you well know with your mom, is the being in sympathetic dominant. Mm-hmm. When you're in fight or flight all the time and you cannot heal at that state. Yeah. So a lot of our work is to calm down the autonomic nervous system. And we have really advanced technologies that help this. In addition to starting every morning, we start with praise and worship. It's just amazing, right, what that does. And people hugging, even through COVID, we hugged their patients, they hugged each other and all that. So the mind going back to that and nutrition and putting this all together with hope and love is so important. And then enjoying the food, right? Mm-hmm. And making it with love, because there's been studies about that.
Yeah.
They did a study where they had two plates of food cooked at the same time by the same person with the same ingredients. And they had this little gadget that measures the energy contents of the food. So they put it on plate one and the gadget went, and then they prayed over and blessed the second plate. And guess what? The needle went.
Wow. Right?
Yeah. So just that, something that simple and that powerful, bless your food. So if you're out at a restaurant and you can't have something organic, or you don't know where that romaine lettuce came from, just bless it and say, oh Lord, you know, get these toxins out of here.
I love that, Dr. Tony. And again, you can apply that mindset and that philosophy to treatments too, right? And I always tell my mom that. I mean, that's so powerful. So whatever therapy someone opts to pursue, be that mistletoe, ozone, you know, whatever that might be, tell yourself, like, this therapy is going, it's helping me. And I know Evalise Page said when she was doing her mistletoe subcutaneous injections, she imagined the mistletoe as like mini Pac-Man going to eat at the tumor cells. And that's so important, right? That visualization is, again, probably more important than we otherwise would think it is.
Absolutely. And that was also scientifically proven. There's a doctor by the name of Emmett Smith, MD. And what he did is he took blood out of the patient, many patients. He did immune profiles like white blood cells, lymphocytes, natural killer cells, T cells, B cells, all these immune profiles. Then he has he's done a work called immunoimagery. And back then it was a DVD, and no, not a DVD, it's a VHS. I don't think you know about VHS.
Oh, I do. Exactly. I remember them. I was small, but I remember them.
Yeah, you were like 2 years old or something, right? So you put the VHS in the thing, and you see exactly what you said, Jacqueline. It was like, you see the white blood cells, you see the macrophages like Pac-Man cells. So people did this deep visualization of the immune system. They didn't take anything, no mistletoe or vitamin C, anything. And then sometime later, I forget if it was 4 weeks or 6 weeks, they retested those same immune markers, and there was a significant increase in the immune system just by deep visualization. So you're absolutely right, and that was proven.
Yeah, that's incredible. I could nerd out on studies like that. I just think they're so fascinating, and they prove just the basics that we already know, power of mindset. Well, Dr. Tony, we've covered so many things. I do want to be conscious of your time. I could spend hours talking to you. But one thing I did want to ask, so there are so many different types of complementary therapies out there, as you well know. And this is a bit of a loaded question and certainly depends on the individual, but I am curious, in your clinics, if you could choose two or three therapies outside of nutrition that you found to be most effective, what would they be?
It would be using energy, sound, light, and heat. Sonotherapy, photodynamic therapy, and hyperthermia. Very, very powerful. And independently of what your spiritual religious beliefs are, but first was the word.
Mm-hmm.
And the word, let there be light, was God, right? And so I didn't think about this when I started using sound and light. Now, all the clinics, not all of them, but many clinics in the world are saying, yes, sound and photo. I've been doing this since 2002. Wow. Right? Using sound and light. And so now the FDA, and I think it was October 2023.
Histotripsy?
Histotripsy, right? For liver tumors.
My mom, I actually put in her name to see if she was a candidate for that. So hopefully we'll hear back this week. But when I first when I first heard about that, I was beyond excited.
Yes, right? Using sound. And it's like a feather in our cap because we've been doing this since 2002. We don't call it histotripsy. We call it sonodynamic therapy. It's the same thing.
Right.
It's using sound to affect the tumor. So this is something we do at our center, and patients continue with sound therapy at home. They go home with an ultrasound device of specific frequency, wavelength, and intensity to target the tumors, be it in the liver, the breast, the axillary nodes, or somewhere else. So those would be the top three. And because, as you said, there's a lot. And more recently, Jacqueline, we have two new therapies at the at our center in Cancun that we're already seeing amazing results with. And it's one is cord blood cells. So using stem cells from umbilical cord, guess what? At the minute one of birth, when the baby is born at minute one, we call that the perfect moment. So they clamp the cords, and they clamp the cord at minute one when that baby takes the first breath. And that is the most powerful stem cells that anyone. And these cells are not expanded. They're not manipulated. There are no growth factors added. And the only thing that's done non-chemically, non-toxically, is that nucleated red blood cells are removed, because that's what can cause potentially an adverse effect with the infusion. So right now we have 30-plus patients, and already what we're hearing is beyond incredible. I had the cord cells myself 4 or 5 days ago for wellness. And so there's 10 of us that have gotten it for wellness, including my wife, and about 30 or so patients for the cancer. And we're combining that with a really high-tech technology from Europe that is correcting the voltage in the body. And I know there's a lot of devices like pulsating electromagnetic field, PEMF. We have that. We've been doing that for a long time. Actually, I presented this to the world in The Truth About Cancer in 2017 or so.
See, you were way ahead of the game.
Yeah, so now with this device that we have, it's really sophisticated, a German-made device from that you lie on. It's a 30-minute session in your... You remember I talked about the voltage of unhealthy cancer cells being so low. We're bringing this voltage high. Cancer cells cannot take that voltage, and so they lyse. And we're improving the voltage of normal cells that can, you know, be a little damaged. So, the cord cells, we call this RAFA, restorative therapy, RRT, with the voltage, combining that with the hyperthermia, the heat, the photodynamic therapy, sonodynamic therapy, and then, of course, following the 7 key principles, right?
Yeah, that's so fascinating. Mm-hmm. Here's a question for you too, Dr. Tony. So all of those therapies, I mean, they essentially cause the cancer cells to like self-destruct, right? I've read, interestingly, that cancer cells actually have the ability to revert back to normal cells. And there's a substance, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, called fermented wheat germ, that some evidence has shown it does just that, right? It causes the cancer cells to revert back to normal cells with healthy mitochondria. So are there any therapies, I don't know, even maybe coming to light that do that?
Well, what is a cancer cell? A cancer cell is a damaged cell, a precancerous cell, a damaged cell that couldn't self-destruct. It couldn't apoptose. That's the word, apoptosis. So it couldn't apoptose. It couldn't, what you're talking about, it couldn't repair itself. So now it went rogue. And that's what a cancer cell is. And as a living organism, it's going to try to survive. So a cancer cell is a damaged cell that couldn't kill itself, couldn't repair itself, and now it went rogue. Mm-hmm. So what we do in this field, mitochondria and all that, we're working with the University of California at San Diego for a new mitochondrial test that is coming out. And I'm waiting for my results. I did mine first to learn about this. But yeah, working at the mitochondrial level is very important, and it's voltage. It comes back to energy and voltage, and then you come in with the fermented wheat extract and nutrition and all that, then you get, but there isn't one thing. Yeah. And that's one, you know, that's something that we all know and have to realize that there isn't one thing, because cancer, as we know, is multifactorial. It has very complex mechanisms to try to survive. They're called the 14 biological hallmarks of cancer. I talk about them in my book. But when I published my book a couple of years ago, there were only 10 that were discovered. Since then, there's four more, right? And but there's the main 10 are in my book. They're called the biological hallmarks of cancer. So we know that cancer is complex, cancer is smart, and we have to do a multi-treatment approach, right, yeah, to have the best results. So, yes, I see, Jacqueline, that you have studied a lot, learned a lot with the journey that your mom is on, and I really congratulate you, because as we started off this conversation, that's what led me, you know, to where I am now, when my father was diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Thank you, Dr. Tony. No, I appreciate that. And again, I always say God takes a bad situation and brings good from it. So that's what he's done with Well and Strong. And it truly is my passion. And I love educating people about this, because I always say you have to be your own advocate, especially in the oncology space. But so important. Well, Dr. Tony, this has been wonderful. I have learned so much. I do hope to have you on again at some point soon. But where can listeners find you?
Well, hopeforcancer.com, hope4cancer.com is a website. There's a lot of information on there. We have a great team. We also have a research and education team. So we do a lot of five-year survival data. We do longevity studies. We do longitudinal studies. We do quality. You know, we have a big team that is, not only are we in the clinical aspect, but we're saying, okay, what can we do better? But where can we improve on a constant basis? So Hope for Cancer, hopeforcancer.com will give you a lot of that information. And we also do a webinar every month. I started out every week when the pandemic hit, and now we're doing it every month, and it's reached thousands and people from many parts of the world, as your podcast is. So this is good, where there's a lot of us like-minded, right? We're providing this education.
I love it. Wonderful. Well, I will be including the links to all of those in the show notes. But my last question for you, and this is often my favorite one to ask, and that is, what does being well and strong mean to you?
Being well and strong means living your life as God intended, because when that sperm fertilizes the egg, there's a spark of light that has been shown in scientific studies. Of course, I believe that this is a spark of God, but the science says that there's an overproduction of zinc, and there's a mineral reaction, and it causes a spark, right? So this is a spark of God. I have in vitro babies. I have twins that were in vitro. And the doctor, brilliant guy in L.A., he put everything together in the Petri dish, but he said, Tony, now it's not up to me. Nature will do what nature does. God is what's going to make this egg be fertilized and have beautiful twins. And that's what happened. So well and strong to me means thinking about that moment of creation when our journey began as a physical being. It was with a spark of light. So be in the light always. Think positive. Be well. And remember, it's never too late to have a happy childhood. So you may have had situations where difficult sexual abuse, which is a big deal with breast cancer, you might have been an orphan, you might have been a not wanted child, so many things, right? But remember, it's never too late to have a happy childhood. So being well and strong, meaning take that step, be proactive, start with loving yourself, be in tune with your creator, and great things happen. And know that cancer, you know, they say cancer is not a death sentence, but cancer is actually a word. It's not a sentence. So cancer is not a death word, right? And Yeah, cancer is never a death word. I've seen it, as you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, I've seen stage four patients that, you know, from the medical world. And always remember to make a decision whether you're going to come to for cancer or go to another clinic or continue on your conventional work. Find a moment of stillness and pray, meditate, find it from the inside because success starts inside. So being well and strong starts from the inside. And what you give, you shall receive, right? But first start with giving a lot to yourself and loving yourself. And well and strong, I love the name of your podcast, Jacqueline.
Thank you.
And, you know, we could all be well and strong. Remember to sleep well, exercise, the nutrition, and also the mindset. And if you do that, you could be well and strong. And I think we could live 120 years. So that's my goal.
Amen. I love all of that. Well, Dr. Turney, on your 120th birthday, we'll have to have you back on.
Okay.
Well, no, I love that. I'm gonna have you
before
on
that,
way,
right?
Way before that. We'll do a special celebratory episode for that.
I love
birthday.
That. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Turney, thank you so much. I'm so excited to share this with listeners. So truly, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Continue your good work, and I encourage everyone to listen, share Jacqueline's podcast because not only mine but her other podcasts. And education is so important because now in 2024. We really have to be proactive. In Mexico, they say mañana, we mean tomorrow, but it has to start owing today, right?
I love that.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you would like to support the show, please subscribe, leave a rating and review, and share it with others. Be sure to visit wellandstrong.com to access notes from the show and to stay current with new content. I'm so grateful you joined me. Be well and be strong.